It's not every day that you get to interview a guy with Academy Award, Golden Globe, and a Grammy. Joining me for another episode of Sound Sessions is Ryan Bingham. Ryan, thank you so much for making time for us today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So I got to say this before I go all fanboy and start acting like Chris Farley when he interviewed when he interviewed the Beatles. But seriously, I have been to half a dozen of your concerts, and your Muscolito and Junkie Star literally make up my morning playlist.
All right.
So for me, this is super exciting.
Thank you.
So I guess one of the things I want to start talking about is you have a very distinctive sound. Some people talk about like Bob Dylan and things like that. Is that just like a natural voice thing? Is that something that you've always just kind of like the first time you sang, belted out a tune, that's just what it sounded like?
Not necessarily. I think I kind of wore my voice out over the years playing in some of these little rough honky-tonks and bars, you know, especially back in the day when I started playing. You know, most of the places that I played were places that people didn't necessarily go to listen to music. You know, they went there to get drunk and fight, and they're, you know, kind of rough honky-tonks. And, is when you could still smoke in a lot of bars, you know, it was really smoky, and the PAs or sound system wasn't very well, and so you're just constantly kind of trying to sing over the noise of people in the party, and just kind of, and I think not knowing how to sing either, you know what I mean? I just kind of had an old acoustic guitar and knew a few cowboy chords and could, you know, play a few songs, but didn't really know how to sing and really how to play, so I was really just kind of learning all at the same time and trying to, you know, I guess it's like the path of least resistance.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Singing through that stuff, so I don't know, I think just over the years it's, you know, definitely taking its toll.
What got you into singing in the first place?
Man, really just some friends of mine. I used to rodeo. I used to go down and travel rodeo.
I was going to get to that.
Riding bulls and all of that. And my mother had bought me a guitar for my 16th birthday. And I was living down in Laredo, Texas, down the border of Texas and Mexico. And the first song I ever learned was an old classical mariachi song called La Malagueña. This old man taught me how to play that. And I moved away and didn't really know any other musicians, and that was the only song I knew for a couple of years, and I just got so sick of playing it that I went and bought me a book of guitar chords and started learning some other chords and just making up little tunes about our adventures on the weekends going to these rodeos, and really it was just friends of mine, you know, asking me to play these little songs we were making up, you know, just for fun, and then we'd go into a bar somewhere and they'd get me to grab my guitar and play a song, and then the bars would ask me to come back and play a gig, and it just kind of happened. I never really, you know, planned on it.
You know, before I go to the music part, so you're talking about rodeo. I used to love going to rodeo. Went to the Houston rodeo for like 6 straight years.
Yeah.
And the only thing, all the rodeo guys, I would meet with them afterward and talk, and I was a little kid, so they'd let me sign autographs and all this stuff. And every one of them, half of them were from New Mexico.
Yeah.
And every one of them, the first thing they tell you is like, don't sign no autographs to the Texas people. They aren't real cowboys.
That's right.
So knowing they're from New Mexico and you lived in Texas, I knew I had to ask you. It's true, right? No real cowboys in Texas.
There ain't no real cowboys in Texas. They're all in New Mexico.
So who were your biggest influencers? And I mean, obviously, it could have been music or not music. Who were the big influencers that you were like, yeah, you know, like, I want to be like them? And then when you got to music, you know, who were the sounds you were listening to in your head and were trying to emulate?
You know, when I really started writing tunes and living around Texas, you know, in Austin especially, it was a lot of the Texas guys, you know, Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark, Joe Ely, Steve Earle, you know, a lot of those guys that were kind of from the same part of the world that I was from, and, you know, I could relate to their songs and stories because it was, you know, in places that I was growing up in and living in, and so those were some of the first, you know, songwriters I started listening to when I was playing music that I gravitated towards those guys. And then, you know, from there I really got into old blues stuff like Robert Johnson.
Yeah.
And I loved
Robert Johnson.
Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. And then got into Bob Dylan was really big for me. The Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin, all the, you know, the rock and roll stuff. And a lot of old country stuff. Marty Robbins, Bob Wills, Tommy Duncan, some of the old Western swing and things, and then Willie and Waylon and the boys.
I think it's really, what I think is really unique about your music, and like I said, as a fan, I have a couple of buddies and they're, you know, like Kanye, and they listen to like pop stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're always giving me, you know, a bunch of crap about the country music stuff that I listen to and folk and Robert Johnson and all this other stuff. And the two of them who will be coming to the concert you're playing at here at the Vic tonight actually have your poster, one of your posters from Meadows of Nashville or one of the places you were at, above his bed. And I introduced him to it. You were in Milwaukee at the place underneath the rave. And I took him to the first concert. It was like January.
Man, that 40th. Place is crazy.
Isn't it?
The rave.
We were front row.
We were just talking about that place last night. Yeah.
We were front row at that. It was icy as hell. It was the January show.
It's got a real spooky swimming pool down in the bottom. Yeah.
It's creepy.
Yeah, it's spooky.
I took my buddy to the show, and he was like, and I had to fight him to get him to the show. He's like, I don't do this country stuff, whatever. And I was like, telling you. You listen to the Ryan Bingham show, you're going to get it. It's a total fusion of, there's a country twist in there, there's a folky twist, there's a jazzy twist, there's a lot of soul in it. And to me, like, I think it probably, I guess it sort of makes sense to me now when I ask you the question about what your influences were, and then find out that you know, didn't grow up doing guitar, that wasn't your thing, singing and playing music, that as you sort of advanced through your life, every sort of part of your life had its own thing that you drew to. And now it seems like it all kind of comes together in some amazing music.
Yeah, and I think, I feel really lucky, too, to have kind of started out around the Austin area. You know, there was just a lot of different kinds of music happening there. A lot of the mariachi and tejano, conjunto music coming up from Mexico, and then a lot of jazz and blues out of New Orleans and Louisiana, and the, Cajun music, and the Western swing from North Texas and Oklahoma, and lots of different, German and Czech cultures with the Oompa bands. There's just a lot of, and then a lot of young kids in Austin, too, with all kinds of different bands, the indie rock and roll stuff, the EDM stuff, blues. I mean, it was just a lot of stuff going on there that, you couldn't really help but be influenced by some sounds, I really was into all of it.
It's pretty evident, obviously, because your sound is very unique. Your voice is very unique. The songwriting is very unique. Everything you've got is just very, it's very cool. And obviously, like I said, I'm a fan. When did you decide, all right, enough with the rodeo, enough injuries, broken hands, broken this, broken that, I'm going to actually try to make a career of music, and you joined, created a band and all that stuff. When did that happen?
Man, I started, really playing. Get some of my first gigs at the rodeos as well, and it kind of got to a point where I had more gigs lined up than I did, rodeos, or it was about the same, so I just had to make a choice, it was remember being like, well, do I go enter the rodeo tonight, or I got this gig down the road that I know is gonna pay me some money, and I was good enough to ride on the weekends and stuff, but I wasn't good enough to rodeo full time. I always had to have a day job during the week, and it was usually construction or something like that, digging holes for somebody. So it didn't take me long to figure out that the guitar felt a lot better in my hands than that shovel.
I was gonna say it's a different kind of hurt, right? There's the fall on the ground hurt, and then there's maybe a hurting in my head the next morning after a late night playing some songs. So as you started, started with your band and you guys were kind of turning around, how did T Boone Burnett, how did that come together? How did they find you? How did you, I had actually seen you play in Dallas. Mm-hmm. I was there for a Cowboys game, and you were playing at one of the Dallas State Fair or something like that before the Crazy Heart stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my God, this guy is awesome. And then I didn't really check back on it, and next thing I know, I see, Crazy Heart coming out. I was like, I know that guy. it was awesome. So, how did that all come about? How did they reach out to you?
Man, it was I had a couple of records out, and we'd been playing on the road quite a bit. And I think the director, Scott Cooper, is how I really first met all those guys, through my friend and agent, Jack Wiggum. He had a copy of one of my first records and was a fan of the music, and just called me up to go to lunch one day, and he gave me a copy of the script for the film and told me, about the whole thing and asked me if I'd like to try to write a song for it. And that's how it all started. I met him, read the script, and started writing the song, and then he introduced me to T-Bone and Stephen Bruton and all those guys, and then it just kind of went on from there.
I'd say it did. Yeah. I'd say it did. What was it, since then, obviously you've kind of had a couple different changes, band changes and things like that. What has it been like? I mean, first off, what was it like going into Hollywood? I remember watching an interview you did. You played, I think you were playing Hallelujah. Mm-hmm. You played Hallelujah, for an interview, I think you did, right around the Academy Awards when you won, and you were just like, man, these Hollywood folks, it's just, I'm out of this.
Yeah, it's crazy, man, and it's always kind of a strange thing for me, how I got into music in the first place, because I really didn't have, an identity, I always struggle with that a little bit, You know, I mean, as my roots are, you know, I'm from New Mexico, and my family is a ranching family, and I grew up rodeoing, and, you know, I had a cowboy hat on, wear boots and stuff. But musically, you know, I was such a fan of all kinds of different things that, you know, automatically if I walked into a bar with a guitar, people would just assume, well, oh, here's a country band or whatever, you know. But I always struggled with that because I always liked to play all kinds of different music, all kinds of different kinds of music. And going anywhere, well, it was always the same thing. You know, but Hollywood, that whole scene out there is it's pretty crazy. You know,
you live out there now, don't you? Or in LA?
I live in Los Angeles. Yeah, I live in Topanga outside of Los Angeles. But it was cool for me because I still, you know, feel like I'm from the outside looking in. You know?
I believe it. It's I have a couple of buddies who have some shows that they're actually on there, and the stories are absolutely legendary. I think we can probably talk about them.
It really, the stuff really happens. You know, I'd like to say it's kind of a fairy tale, but I mean, it's damn. I mean, there's some crazy stuff that goes on out there.
off this track, we'll talk about that because that's some funny stuff. So I guess one thing I'd ask out of that: what do you miss most about the days before the Hollywood stuff and before people know you for the Weary Con, and you can sort of create a new song, write a new album, and they're gonna just tune into that, and you got your loyal followers. Not people who are just like, I want to hear the Weary Con. You know, like, what do you miss most?
Man, you know, that stuff's really kind of thinned out a lot too. You know, the Weary Con stuff. I feel like we've had a lot of folks coming out to hear, you know, most songs from other records, but from those days, I think the biggest thing that I miss is it was so spontaneous. You know, it was more about kind of the adventure, you know, than it was really about kind of playing gigs every night for the business or the money. You know, it was, you know, I was always wanted to travel around the world and go places I'd never been and meet people from all over. And so that was a big part of it. It was just, we never knew where we were going to sleep night to night.
Yep.
Never knew, you know, if we were going to eat night to night, all that stuff. So I think when you're living like that, it forces you, you know, into situations that you wouldn't probably get in otherwise. You know, it makes you get out of your comfort zone and really kind of go out of your way to try to meet folks when you need somewhere to stay at night. So that's when all the interesting stuff happens.
I was gonna say, I think that's the stuff you grow from. That's the best stuff in life. At least to me, the best stories I have are the ones where, you know, maybe I get myself in a little bit of trouble and I'm trying to find my way out of it.
Yeah, it makes you make decisions, you know, get decisions, and it's like, you know, sometimes it's the hardest times in your life, but at the end of the day, you look back on it like, man, you know, I'm kind of glad I went through that or experienced that.
Absolutely.
Or maybe you met somebody that you know, still in touch with that you're super close friends with now just because of some chance meeting that, you know, broke down the side of the road and someone stopped to help you out, you know. And
those are the best stories. So, I mean, I guess on that note, with regard to being back on the road and things kind of back to that normal, maybe a little bit more bread in the pocket than it was before, but still, you know, on the road, what is the best coolest road story you've got? I don't care if it's shareable or not, you know, like, whatever, what is the, one of those stories you're like, man, I did this, I saw this person, whatever it happened, I never forgot it.
Man, it feels like there's a whole, like, 10-year stretch of that's all that happens. It's craziness, you know, and stories that could go on forever. But I remember one time we were trying to get to California from Texas and somehow, like, wound up in the middle of the Grand Canyon, like, at 4 in the morning, broke down, and, you know, all we had was, like, 2 cases of beer. So we just sat out on the side of the highway and drank beer for a few hours and finally, somebody came along. You know, we were out in the middle of nowhere, and finally, somebody came along and helped us get our Suburban fixed up. And we made it all the way to California, and all we wanted to do is make it to the beach. We didn't have anywhere to stay. We didn't know where we were going. And right before we got to over this hill to where we could see the ocean, and we broke down again.
Almost there.
And there was one friend I knew out there that I had a number to, and I called her, and she showed up on the back of a Harley Davidson, and the Rutger Hauer was the one driving the Harley Davidson. So it was like, you know, we're all sitting there broke down the side of the road, hadn't changed clothes, we hadn't showered in a week, and here comes Rutger Hauer with our friend Anouk on the back of this.
What are the odds of that? What are the odds of that happening?
That stuff happened all the time.
That's unbelievable. So what's the next thing for Ryan Bingham? Obviously you're on tour right now. What is the next, you know, chapter look like for you?
Oh, man, yeah, just, I feel really lucky to be playing music and getting to do it, you know, for a living and making records. So right now, you know, This record's been out for about a year. I'm ready to kind of get home and start writing again for another album. I've really been having a lot of fun with the guys playing in the band right now, and we've been writing a lot of stuff on the road, so I'm going to get back in the studio and start recording.
That's awesome. You know? Very cool. Where do people go to find Ryan Bingham albums, buy some stuff? I hope they come to this tonight's show and other shows.
Our shows, definitely. We always have a ton of stuff at our shows, and then our website, binghammusic.com, and we have all the, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all the, you know, we got all those social
got
media
all that
sites
stuff.
And stuff. So, yeah, look us up.
I hope people do. So I'm told that you guys are going to play a little live music for us, and we're really looking forward to hear some of that. I'm Scott Catoon, and this has been another installment of The Sound Sessions on WGN Plus.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan.
All right.
Awesome, dude. Thank you so much for making the time.
Yeah, no, thank you, man. Thanks for the support. I've been carrying my trouble, this pack strapped to my shoulder. Ever since I was a baby, I've been running from everything I know. Tell me about my trouble, nobody knows about my trouble. Nobody knows about my trouble, except for my baby and me. I was born a cowboy, way out west in New Mexico. Times were tough, we had to let it go. We moved to town, but they couldn't move it out of me. Sweet down in my blood, pickle and anyone on the stool. Nobody thought that I ever would get away with the trouble in me. Well, it didn't take too long, throw the pills in the bottom of a bottle, dig a deep grave with the shovel, and bury everything that a young boy needs. But I found me a guitar, a lonely night in a boy town. The pain I started to ride it down, but it wouldn't stay away from me. I got the hell out of there, made my way up to the big town. Checked myself into the lost and found. What do you know, my baby come for me. Now I'm living a good life, away from all of the bad advice. Take it a day like it's a paradise, so people don't bother me. I've been carrying my trouble, and this pack strapped to my shoulder. Ever since I was a baby, I've been running from everything I know. Don't you tell me about my trouble, nobody knows about my trouble. Nobody knows about my trouble, except for my baby and understand. Your little, they say a diamond is too rough. Yo-le-ho, I never traded gold in love. Look upon the stars above. They never shine as bright as my diamond in the rough. People, they tell me just to give up and go on home. But to have no home to go to is something they'll never know. Yo-le-ho, they say your diamond is too rough. Yo-le-ho, I never trade more than love. Yo-le-ho, they say your diamond is too rough.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. You might have a career in this.
Pretty good at this
stuff. Yeah. Pretty good at this stuff. All right.
Oh, man.
That was awesome.